EDM board bombs.
Welcome back to another week with EM Board Bombs. I'm your co-host, co-founder, really just the solo host today. Temporary though, temporary solo host, don't worry. I'll go hitting the unsubscribe button. Dr. Hussein is still with this organization. No budget cuts, we're all good. Board season was great for us, ITE was great. Entering a little bit of that spring slumber, but hey, we're not going anywhere. We got episodes still churning out each week, helping you know things for hashtag EM Life, as well as your upcoming boards, maybe. Or maybe you just want to learn more. Isn't that a novel concept? This is EM Board Bombs, and EM Board Bombs is known for our cutting-edge edutainment, as we like to say. Remember our Rapid Bombs podcast we have? You can check it out at emboardbombs.com. There you'll find a smattering of handouts, PDF guides, downloadable study guides, as well as our Question Bank podcast, the one and only, no other medical specialty has this. It's awesome. Check it out. Offering a free trial right now, as well as group discounts if you're part of a residency or group of med students or just seasoned attendings and wanting to learn more. It's awesome. So check it out. Let's just dive into it. I'm excited. We've got a great STEM today. You get a 47-year-old male arriving to the ED with a headache after MVC, motor vehicle crash. When you ask him what happened, he openly admits that the accident was his fault. He says he didn't look both ways before turning out onto a busy state highway, and he was hit by oncoming traffic. He lost consciousness and vomited once after he came to at the scene. He is now alert and oriented, with complaints of a mild headache. He endorses neck pain as well. You ask the patient again to confirm the story because you are surprised he is actually admitting the accident was his fault. You contact your local highbrow medical journal to ask to submit a case report on the ED patient who has admitted that the car crash was their fault. They are shocked to hear this because no prior cases have been reported in the literature, and they say they will waive the article processing fee and take the article for free. Oh my gosh. Anyways, back to the patient. They undergo CT head, and there is some air that is seen along the inner frontal skull line intracranially. Which of the following is the best next step for the emergency medicine physician, that's you, managing this patient? Choice A, administer high flow oxygen. Choice B, immediate antibiotic therapy. Choice C, initiate anti-epileptic therapy. Choice D, perform a lumbar puncture for definitive diagnosis. All right, correct answer here is going to be... Wait, what's that? No, Dr. Hussein just texted me. He said he needs me to really reemphasize the fact that Rapid Bombs is on our website, Question Bank Podcast. Check it out. And also check out our only sponsor shout out to EM News, Emergency Medicine News. They have a website, they have a print edition, tons of articles that are relevant to your field and practice of emergency medicine. Check it out. All right, I think we're back to the answer choices here. Answer choice that's correct is choice A, administer high flow oxygen therapy. What? Crazy, huh? Almost as crazy as someone admitting that a car crash is their fault. Never seen it in my career. I know you haven't either if you're listening to this podcast. So this patient has particular CT head finding with air along the inner frontal skull line intracranially. He has pneumocephalus. The most simple definition here of pneumocephalus is literally just taking apart the word, defined as the presence of air within the cranial cavity. Now, this condition can be acute, less than 72-hour onset, or chronic. We don't care about the chronic type here. It's not going to be tested on either. The most common cause of this is trauma, followed by any type of cranial or spinal surgery or whatever, post-surgery. Any type of neurosurgery procedure, to be exact. Other rare cases will not be tested on. You just don't have to know them. Think about some traumatic event disrupting the integrity of the skull and that allows air to enter the cranial cavity, whether it be accidental trauma, you know, like a car crash, blunt trauma, or penetrating trauma, or it's from the cranial surgery they had. Now, the most common location for this is, like this question described, the frontal region of the skull. And obviously, the presentation in trauma is fairly obvious. Anyone that meets indication for a CT head after any blunt trauma is going to get diagnosed with this. They're going to catch this. More about that later, though. Now, what about the patients who are post-cranial or post any spinal procedure? Well, it's classically taught that you need to think about pneumocephalus in those with head trauma with or without a CSF leak from the nose or ear. Well, this always comes up. It doesn't really matter in this case. That is rare in real life, and on the test, even if they try to hint at that, there's some type of clear fluid leaking out of the ear or nose, you're going to catch on to that. That's an easy catch. More likely, you're going to have a patient with nonspecific neurologic symptoms, aka headache or nausea and vomiting. Again, it's a lot easier if you think in terms of the Canadian CTC spine rule or New Orleans headache rule, whatever you want to use, or Gestalt, whatever you use to decide on head imaging after a significant blunt trauma story. If the story is concerning and or the patient meets criteria based on those rules, get a head CT. Now, other non-trauma reasons to think about pneumocephalus essentially is pretty obvious here. It's so obvious that it feels silly covering it. Anyone would be triggered to get a head CT in a patient that comes in and said, I just had a craniotomy. I'm sorry, it's that obvious. Other things that should trigger you in terms of getting the head CT would be any recent post-operative meningitis that were treated and they were sent home. I'm laughing because this is so silly. Any headaches or seizures following cranial or spinal surgery, or any nerve palsy or tinnitus. Again, obvious things that any emergency physician is going to order a head CT on. None of these symptoms may be unique, but any patient with a headache who has any type of neurologic deficits, seizures, and or vomiting after a trauma obviously needs a head CT. Or you can insert craniotomy there too. Any of those symptoms after a craniotomy or any neurosurgical surgery or something. Now, your physical exam is likely to be normal in most patients. Most with head trauma have a non-focal exam and a headache. They might have concussive symptoms or TBI symptoms. Maybe they could be a little bit altered, amnesic from the event. Maybe they're intoxicated as well. Again, another reason to get head CT. Thankfully, this is a condition that has an easy gold standard test. MRI? No, just kidding. CT head, readily available in your ED, probably overused, but in this case, correctly used. Now, CT head, according to the literature, is able to detect as low as 0.55 milliliters, that is a small amount, of intracranial air. And in the same breath, almost the same sentence, the source I read mentions that, quote, a skull radiograph requires at least 3 milliliters of air for detection, end quote. Who is getting skull radiographs? Please write to me. Write to me right now if you were getting skull radiographs in your patients. For any reason, I'm just curious. I like how they mention this caveat here that could be an option. Anyway, two signs on a CT scan that are considered characteristic of pneumocephalus. There's this really cool name sign called the Mount Fuji sign, which you just have to look up in Google because it's just so characteristic. It's a collection of air in the frontal region with a partitioning of the frontal lobes, and it literally looks like Mount Fuji. And then there's the air bubble sign, which is air bubbles scattered in cisterns of the brain. Really descriptively named here, the air bubble sign. All right, so this seemed easy so far, right? Most of you are following along, I hope. You're following along, you're like, this is easy. I'm essentially half listening to this podcast. This is turned into one of those podcasts where you are doing something else right now. We get it. We understand. Well, come back. Whatever you're doing right now, I'm like knocking on the glass window, come on back because I'm about to go over the stuff that's actually something you may not know. So the management of pneumocephalus is the part that's going to be tested on because they know you're going to get a head CT on the right patients. The chances are you know exactly when to order the head CT in blunt trauma. We hope so. And obviously you should get one on any patient who is post-cranial surgery with a headache. But maybe you don't know how to manage these patients beyond calling neurosurgery or transporting them to a hospital that has neurosurgery. The treatment is generally conservative, with 90% or so of cases showing spontaneous reabsorption after 2 to 3 weeks with the following measures. Following measures meaning really avoiding any increased intracranial pressure. So the key points here are going to be bed rest, placing the patient in a sitting position at 30 degrees, pain control, of course, antipyretics, anti-nausea medications, and avoiding any Valsalva maneuvers. So control any type of coughing, vomiting, straining for bowel movements, nose blowing precautions. Interestingly, you also want to start high flow oxygen therapy here in the hospital. That's the correct answer here today. Weird, I know. Typically, it's 5 liters per minute for 5 days with a non-rebreather mask. That's kind of aggressive. They may titrate that down. But the key is here is no BiPAP or CPAP. No positive pressure, obviously, anything that would raise intracranial pressure. Why is this? Well, oxygen therapy washes out the nitrogen. It increases the rate of nitrogen absorption. And then over time, the oxygen will replace intracranial nitrogen, and it's well absorbed in brain tissue and blood. If they have any signs of increased intracranial pressure or impending herniation, that's a much sicker patient than the typical pneumocephalus patient. You're doing hypertonic saline or mannitol, depending on your institution. Seems to be that hypertonic saline here is replacing mannitol. Here's another interesting point. In traumatic pneumocephalus, so blunt trauma pneumocephalus, prophylactic ceftriaxone has not been shown to be beneficial in preventing meningitis. So where do we go from here? Well, quick review. Whatever you're doing to order head CTs and blunt trauma, keep doing it. If you're doing it right, that is. Sorry, I should back up. Whatever you're doing with good Gestalt or if you're using Canadian CT head rule, that's awesome. Keep doing that. And you won't really have to change your practice that much to look for pneumocephalus. When you do find pneumocephalus, of course, you're going to consult neurosurgery. They're going to likely be admitted. The treatment is usually conservative here. Remember to control their pain, control their nausea, prevent any Valsalva or nose blowing, coughing, vomiting, straining for bowel movement, whatever. And don't start antibiotics if it's due to a traumatic reason. If it's post-craniotomy or post-spinal surgery, depending on how the patient looks, with or without fever, etc., that's a complicated discussion. You're never going to be tested on that. That is a whole different conversation with your neurosurgery team. And that's really about it here. So if you want to check out Rapid Bombs, go to our podcast website, emboardbombs.com. Very easy, straightforward. Check out our handouts, check out our question bank podcast. And that's really about it. Hopefully, Dr. Hussain will be back next time. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming.